Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Happy Monday to everybody listening and watching out there, unless, of course, you have Gerrit Cole on your fantasy team. Time to answer some questions. Welcome in to Fantasy Baseball Today on Monday, June 28th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. Lots to go over from the weekend. Most added and most dropped players. I have a worryometer, a potential sell-high starting pitcher, and much more. How was the weekend, guys? Chris getting tatted. Chris is getting tatted up.
I got my third tattoo in 8 months. I didn't have any for the first roughly 32 and a half years of my life. I'm making up for lost time, I guess you could say.
What's the experience like, Chris? Because I've thought about it.
God, you can't really see it. It's an awkward place to try to hold up, but a little blinky from Pac-Man, little cherry from Pac-Man. It's a reference to a Wilco song. The experience, you sit in a chair and you get poked with a needle like 3,000 times while you're kind of being poisoned, I think would be like, I think you could accurately describe it, because like once you have a tattoo, what you'll notice is like I took the bandage off this morning and there is a perfect imprint of the tattoo on the bandage because your body is trying to reject the ink that has been put into your skin. So, you know, it's not as bad as that sounds. It's actually kind of fun.
In a very unfavorable light.
It's actually pretty fun. This one hurt, I will say. The first two, not so bad. On the bicep, that was fine. This one on the inner arm, it's a much more sensitive part of your skin.
Yeah.
Gotta say.
I will say, this offseason, I think I came to the realization that if you include Adam, for as rarely as he's on the show, like our group of four, including Adam, none of us had tattoos. And like, what a strange thing that was in the year 2021, that you could get these four random 20, 30 somethings together.
So what you're saying,
and none of them have tattoos.
And what you're saying is I have to get another one. So that we all have one on average.
Yes. On average.
So that that means
one for each of us.
Scott and myself get to choose your next tattoo. We can collaborate on it.
I think it should be all of our faces.
I think it probably should be. Yeah.
Yeah. A Mount Rushmore with me, Scott, Adam Azer, and I don't know. You could choose the fourth person, whoever you want. Whoever
me.
I
have to get my own face.
Yeah. Let's do that. Scott, I'm assuming you didn't get any tattoos this weekend. Fun fact,
I did not.
My dad has like over 30 tattoos and I don't have any yet. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's when I came to the realization, because I think you brought it up and I had seen your dad before. So I just kind of assumed, like father, like son, Frank must have some tattoos under those t-shirts he wears, but apparently not.
Not yet. Let's talk a little bit of baseball. How about we do that?
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right. Oh my goodness gracious. Scott, where would you like to start from the weekend?
I would like to start with Tarek Skubal. Tarek Skubal, our friend Mr. Skubal, who I think had his breakthrough start. If he hadn't had it already, I think he had it this weekend, specifically Sunday, against the Astros of all teams. They're batting like 500 in June. I'm exaggerating. Only Michael Brantley is, but the rest of them are pretty hot too. And Tarek Skubal allowed one hit in seven innings to them. But not only that, he struck out nine. But not only that, he had 21 swinging strikes. But not only that, This is the breakdown of his 21 swinging strikes. You ready? 6 on the four-seamer, 6 on the slider, 4 on the two-seamer, 3 on the changeup, 2 on the curveball. The knock on this guy coming into the season was that he didn't have a diverse enough arsenal. I think he does now. I think he does. This seems like a big step for him. And we've been hyping him a lot lately. He's been a little more up and down over the past couple weeks, but I think he's about to surge here. Tarek Skubal, watch out.
Yeah, this truly was a breakout performance, Scott. The 21 swinging strikes on 102 pitches by itself against the Houston Astros. This is a team that has an 8.3% swinging strike rate on the season, which is by far the best in baseball. So not only are they just an amazing offense that puts the ball in play, they hit for power, they do everything, they do not strike out a lot. And Tarek Skubal, to do what he did over 7 innings, 9 strikeouts, it truly was an amazing performance against that offense. However, he still gave up 10 hard hit balls, but I think this is kind of just who he is at this point, right? Like, you're going to get a lot of whiffs, you're going to get strikeouts, he's going to give up a lot of hard contact.
Yeah,
we've seen that with a lot of, I guess, swing and miss strikeout specialist starting pitchers in the past. Does that actually worry you, Chris?
Yeah, I think you have to be a little bit worried. And, you know, it's reflected in his ERA. He's, you know, a 4.33 ERA, which is actually slightly better than his 5.32 xERA. And, you know, the issue is just his fastball gets hit really, really hard. It's actually not been a problem with any of his other pitches. His xWOBA on his slider, curveball, and changeup are all 234 or below. That's excellent. He's got pretty good whiff rates on all of them. The curveball lagging a little bit, but the issue is just his fastball gets crushed. He's got a 416 WOBA and a 438 xWOBA allowed with the fastball. He's actually been a little bit lucky to have a 416 WOBA. And that would be, just for reference, that would be one of the better marks in baseball for a hitter. So, you know, that's a pitch he throws 50% of the time, roughly. And when that's the case, there's always going to be, I think, some ups and downs.
But hopefully he's developing enough of a secondary arsenal that he doesn't have to rely on the fastball so much, which should make the fastball more effective in theory.
Yes.
You would think so. It is a low spin fastball. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind. Spin rate, as I'm sure you all know by now, if you're baseball fans at this point, spin rate is very important for fastballs. And the higher your spin rate is, generally speaking, the more whiffs you get with your fastball. He actually does get a decent amount of whiffs with the fastball, despite being a low spin rate pitch. But it's kind of Andrew Heaney-esque, where it seems to be like he's getting the whiffs, but it comes at the cost of getting hit really hard when it does get contact.
I hope that's not like a long-term comp for him, but it makes sense in my mind now that you bring it up, Andrew Heaney. I hope he's better.
He's got a deeper arsenal.
Yeah, he definitely does.
Heaney's definitely just like a fastball, slider, changeup guy.
Chris, you're, oh my goodness gracious, from the weekend.
There were a couple of big-name pitchers who have been struggling this season who had really good starts. I think Aaron Nola might have actually been the most impressive of them, tying the major league record for strikeouts in a row with 10. But I'm going to go with Luis Castillo, who had another, you know, it wasn't a dominant start. It was a pretty good start. It was, I believe, 6 shutout innings with 6 strikeouts.
7 shutouts.
He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball during the month of June. It's been quite a turnaround for a guy who had, I believe, an 8 ERA coming into June, but he hasn't allowed more than 3 earned runs in any start. Since the start of June, he's allowed 6 earned runs in 31 and two-thirds innings, 32 strikeouts. Luis Castillo looks like Luis Castillo again. You know, that maybe the walks, 12 and 31 and two-thirds innings, maybe it's a little high, but, you know, that's always been kind of an issue for him. He looks like himself for the most part. You know, the 1 strikeout per inning, not necessarily what you're looking for, but, you know, 25.6% strikeout rate, that's pretty much right in the range you're looking for from Luis Castillo. So my concerns aren't completely gone, but I definitely feel, you know, pretty vindicated about, you know, having had some faith in him still, despite the struggles. I would like to see one more really big strikeout game for him, though.
Yeah.
He hasn't had a double-digit strikeout game since that May 18th start against the Giants.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. I mean, his last five starts have still been very good. 1.71 ERA, 0.98 whip, 32 strikeouts over 31 and a third innings pitch. So it's good. It's just over a strikeout per inning, but that's usually not what we're used to from Luis Castillo. It's usually some huge, like, 12, 11 K per nine kind of number for Luis Castillo. And this year, he's right around a strikeout per inning. During that stretch, he still has a 58% ground ball rate, 13.9% swinging strike rate. So he's nearly back. I feel comfortable saying that for Luis Castillo. Scott, anything that you would like to add on him? He's facing the Padres at home this week.
That's actually not a bad matchup, even though the Padres are good overall. Yeah, I feel much more confident starting Luis Castillo these days. I, of course, wish the strikeouts were higher in June, as well as everything else has gone for him. But given that the swinging strike rate is so high, I think it's just a matter of time.
All right, Luis Castillo, hope you bought low when you could. Should you buy low on Gerrit Cole? I don't know. Well, he was at the Red Sox on Sunday. 5 innings, 8 hits, 6 runs. 5 of those were earned. He gave up 3 home runs, on one of them on the first pitch of the game against Kike Hernandez. He still had 15 swinging strikes on 89 pitches, so I guess that's the positive. He gave up 7 hard hit balls. The spin rates actually weren't down, which I thought was probably the most interesting part of this is like, okay, we've seen other starting pitchers, and I have some names here that I'll go through from the weekend that were, you know, down 100, 200 RPM again on their pitches. That wasn't the case for Gerrit Cole here, yet he was still really bad against the Boston Red Sox. Mind you, one of the best lineups in baseball. His last 8 starts now for Cole, he has a 4.04 ERA during that span. 51 strikeouts over 49 innings pitched. I don't know.
I assume a lot of the damage was coming from this start with that ERA. But yeah, that was interesting with the spin rates, because of course we've seen them dropping since early June, and last start they just totally collapsed. So to see them back, like the RPM on his fastball from a Stevenson average was only down 76 on average. And obviously his average RPM has been dropping since the start of June, but it hasn't dropped enough. It's going to take a while to pull the season-long average down to a point where it no longer makes sense to compare the start to the season average. But like, how did that happen? They checked him after the first inning. They inspected him, and I saw a lot of reactions on Twitter. Like, I think it's safe to say he's not using anything, but maybe they noticed that the spin rates were not down as much as they had been the rest of the month, and it raised suspicions. I wonder if he was compensating in some way for not having that spin, and I don't mean by using a substance necessarily, but maybe he was overthrowing or something. I'm not even sure how you could fabricate a higher spin rate, but I wonder, just because it was notably much higher and he struggled, if he was compensating in some way that affected his command.
The velocity was up for his pitches a little bit, so there's a chance that he was overthrowing. The slider up 1.5 miles per hour, the fastball up almost an entire mile per hour. So I know we mentioned that last week, Chris, with Trevor Bauer, where his spin rates were down, but he kind of compensated by throwing harder. Maybe that's what Gerrit Cole was trying to do here, but it didn't work.
Yeah, I think Cole and Bauer are actually, you know, in a lot of ways, they're not that similar. And I think if either of them heard you saying that they were similar pitchers, they might try to fight you given their rivalry. But in certain ways, I think they're very similar pitchers, because I think they're good command, good control, mediocre command pitchers, if that makes sense. You know, that dichotomy between control, which is throwing in the strike zone, command, which is throwing it in the strike zone where you want to, where hitters can't do damage with it. And I think you saw a really good example of that dichotomy on the bomb that he gave up to Rafael Devers in this start, which, hey man, if you're aiming for the middle of the strike zone, that was a great pitch, but you shouldn't be aiming for the middle of the strike zone. He threw, you know, a 99 mile an hour pitch just right over the heart of the plate, and Rafael Devers, one of the best hitters in baseball, crushed it. You can't make those mistakes. And I think the biggest thing for both Bauer and Cole is, you know, if they do have to compensate for their pitches being less effective, which is essentially what we're talking about with the spin rate, is that, you know, the fastball that goes right down the middle when you're throwing at 98 miles an hour with a 2600 RPM spin rate, you know, that might get under the or might get over the barrel. The hitter might swing under it. Whereas the lower the spin rate, it doesn't rise as much. That's on the barrel. What we might be seeing is that it whether they have to try to throw harder or whether they just throw the same, but they're the same kind of, you know, good control, middling command pitchers, is that the margin for error is slimmer. It doesn't mean they're bad. It just means that they may be more prone to giving up home runs. And these are two pitchers who give up a lot of fly balls already and relatively speaking, give up a decent amount of home runs for how good they are. It's just in Bauer's case, he's improved his control so much. His walk rate has plummeted over the last couple of seasons. And in Cole's case, he's just been so hard to make contact with in general. But that hasn't been the case in either case over the last, you know, since the start of June. It's been a lot of Gerrit Cole's strikeout rate's lower, Trevor Bauer's walk rate is up. And that's just going to make it a little bit harder for them to be, you know, dominant pitchers. I don't think it's, I actually wrote about this. It'll be on cbssports.com/fantasy on Monday morning. I don't think Bauer is suddenly a bad pitcher. I think he's just more like a top 12 pitcher than a top five pitcher, like we talked about on Friday. And I think Cole is more like a part of the pack now, rather than pushing Jacob DeGrom for the best pitcher in baseball, which I think is where he's been since the preseason for me.
Yeah, and I think that's well said. I mean, there's not really anything else actionable with Gerrit Cole. I mean, it's not the time to shop him, obviously, because he's coming off one of his worst starts of the season. The ERA over four over his last eight starts, three of those starts he has allowed five earned runs. So, you know, it's a lot of it did come in this start, Scott, but it's, you know, it's been three starts now where he's allowed five earned runs. It's like, we're just not used to seeing this from Gerrit Cole. So, yeah, I think he's probably just one of that group now from 2-12 because Jacob DeGrom, once again, stands alone. Some other spinny stuff that I noticed from the weekend, Corbin Burnes on Friday against the Rockies still had an okay start, six innings, one run, seven strikeouts. His cutter was down 258 RPM. And I noticed his first 11 starts, he had an 18% swinging strike rate. His last two starts, that is down at 10% for Corbin Burnes. Tyler Mahle against the Braves, six innings, four runs, seven strikeouts. Spin rates were down again for him. I know. I remember last time out, we noticed that with Tyler Mahle. 214 RPM on the fastball, 156 on the slider. What'd you say, Chris?
So he has the sixth largest drop in spin rate from... This is part of what I wrote for the site. I looked at the pitchers with the biggest change in spin rate from June 3rd and earlier since. And Bauer had the highest, 258 RPM on average. He's one of two pitchers above 200 RPM drop. Tyler Anderson's one of the others. Gerrit Cole's fourth, and Tyler Mahle is... Actually, he's seventh. Dylan Bundy, Walker Buehler, and Tyler Mahle are 5, 6, and 7 on that list. So, you know, it's interesting.
Were you just looking at fastball?
Yeah. I'm just looking at fastball.
Because the spin, you know, Corbin Burnes' primary pitch is a cutter, basically.
Yeah, he actually didn't qualify for the leaderboards that I pulled. So,
because it was a cutter or because the change wasn't enough?
He hadn't thrown enough four-seamers.
Okay, yeah. Because I think the three pitchers who have stood out the most in terms of not just the spin rates dropped, but it appears to be changing their effectiveness. The three who stand out most for me are Bauer, Cole, and Corbin Burnes, actually, whose walks have been up and his strikeouts have been down recently. And, you know, it's not conclusive, me saying that. And part of the reason why it's so noticeable is because they were so, so dominant before those drops in spin rate. But nonetheless, I'm noticing a difference with those three.
That's the thing that's hard about all of this is we're dealing with small sample sizes from just the first 2 months of the season. We're dealing with small sample sizes from the 2020 season. And we're dealing with small sample sizes, whether you define it as since the memo or since the crackdown. I think, you know, they are separate things, but obviously there have been some pretty significant changes before the crackdown officially started.
Yeah. It's only been a week of the crackdown. So.
Yeah, and like it's hard to tell. Like, is Corbin Burns just having some natural regression? That wouldn't necessarily be surprising in terms of the results. Like,
right.
Yep.
He had like 4 walks in his first 8 starts or something. That was, he wasn't going to walk 12 people all season, but figuring out this is the thing that makes this fantasy season even more frustrating than it had been already is just new baseball, record high amount of injuries, and now this pitcher crackdown that just injects more uncertainty. And, you know, specifically with Burns, Cole, and Bauer, I think the way to view it is it's not they're going to be worse. It's there is less certainty that they are going to be great.
Yes. And there were 2 other pitchers that I noticed from Sunday. They were up against each other, Max Scherzer and Sandy Alcantara. Scherzer's fastball was down 166 RPM. His slider and curve were down right around 240. So it's pretty big drop. He still had 21 swinging strikes.
Yeah, it was still awesome.
He was still great. Yeah. Sandy Alcantara, not as much. I mean, 5 1/3, 6 hits, 5 runs. 4 of those were earned. 4 walks, 3 strikeouts. So Sandy Alcantara's worst starts of the season.
He was under the weather for this one, from what I was reading. He was dealing with an illness. And his velocity was down. So I think the drop in raw spin rate, you know, this is where the idea of the Bauer units comes in, which is just RPM divided by fastball velocity. And it's kind of like a context neutral spin rate, I guess, given the positive relationship with spin rate and velocity.
All right. So Sandy Alcantara, good to know there. Hopefully he will bounce back in his next start. Before we get to news and notes, just want to remind everyone that we will have a live stream Q&A on Monday on our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. We'll be live from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern time. Chris will be there for the first half of it, and then Scott will join us from 7:30 on. So come hang out. Come ask your questions. Fantasy, baseball, real life, tattoos. You could ask Chris anything that you want. Same thing with Scott. He's got some new couches if you want to ask. How are those couches feeling, Scott? And we will find out.
They're getting a lot of comments, the couches. Everybody loves the couches.
Everybody loves the couches. All right, news and notes. We don't love Joe Girardi because he's a liar. We had a bunch of bullpen happenings this weekend, and Girardi came out on Friday and said, Jose Alvarado will get the next chance to be the Phillies closer. All right, well, since then, let's give you a little bit of timeline of a bunch of things that happened. Friday, they had a doubleheader. Game one, Jose Alvarado had a save chance. He allowed the game-tying run to score. So, okay, messed up there. Game two, Hector Neris, clean ninth inning for his 11th save of the season. Awkward. On Saturday, Jose Alvarado had pitched 3 of 4 days, so they went back to Hector Neris in a one-run game. He gave up 2 runs, took his 6th blown save of the season. Again, awkward. For Sunday, Jose Alvarado used in the 8th inning in a 4-0 game. He gave up a run, and then Archie Bradley got his first save of the season. He also gave up a run. Phillies, bullpens, Girardi, talk amongst yourselves.
So of those 6 blown saves for Neris, I think 5 have come in June, right? At least 4.
That sounds right.
Horrible month. Yeah. Horrible month. So you can understand why Girardi's losing faith in Hector Neris. I don't know why he backed down from his Alvarez stance so quickly.
Alvarado
stance so quickly. Probably. Maybe it had something to do with him blowing the save in that first game. I don't know that I'd be investing so much in Archie Bradley. I mean, he has an ERA over 4, and I don't think he's been that good of a pitcher for a few years now. I think Alvarado is definitely better. If I had to pick one Phillies reliever to roster, I think I'd give Alvarado a slight edge to Neris, actually. Because if Alvarado doesn't claim it quickly, then I could see them just going back to Neris.
Inertia is a powerful force. And like you said, if Alvarado doesn't run away with it, Neris has just kind of kept coming back to the role.
Right.
Over like the last 4 years, really.
What a mess. I picked him up in one of our 12 team roto leagues. I spent $6 out of a $100 budget. Scott, I saw in your dynasty league, you picked up Alvarado for $6. That's a $150 budget. In my main event, he went for, this is a 15 team roto league. Jose Alvarado went for $71 out of a $1,000 budget. So all kind of in that like 6-7% range if you play in a deeper league and you're chasing saves. Not that Alvarado's the guy, but I guess we'll see. Michael Fulmer was placed on the IL for the Tigers with a cervical spine strain in his neck. Jose Cisnero picked up his third save on Saturday. And then on Sunday, Gregory Soto pitched the 9th and the 10th and wound up with the win. Chris, the...
Cisnero worked the 8th, for what it's worth. Cisnero worked the 8th and then Soto the 9th and 10th.
Chris, who gets the next Tiger save? Jose Cisnero or Gregory Soto?
I don't have a strong opinion on it one way or the other. It's a bad team. Neither of those is an especially good pitcher.
I really want it to be Cisnero. I think he's actually good. I think he is good. His numbers in 2020 were good, and 2021's basically caught up to them after a rough start. So, like an ERA around three, a whip around one.
Yeah, I just think you can flip a very boring coin and hope you get five saves out of whichever one comes up. I think I agree with Scott that Cisneros probably better, but I don't have a strong opinion on it.
Gregory Soto has settled down a little bit. He's got a 2.25 ERA. The whip is still high at 1.28, just over a strikeout per inning. You know, it could just be whoever's coming up in the ninth inning, which leads us to the Cincinnati Reds. TJ Antone went back on the IL with that same right forearm strain over the weekend that previously sidelined him. Brad Brock got the save on Thursday. We spoke about that at the time. And then Amir Garrett got the save on Saturday with Brock pitching in the 8th. Reds saves.
I might invest in the Orioles closer situation before I've invested in the Reds right now. I would go with Alvarado or Cisnero or Soto, or for the Orioles, I'd probably guess Paul Fry.
Yeah.
Before I tried picking out anybody in the Reds bullpen to fill in for Lucas Sims, who we don't know how long he'll be out.
Yeah. It was reported back on Thursday, 3 to 4 weeks with an elbow sprain. So again, I think it's probably going to be matchup based. You know, if there are a lot of righties coming up, maybe they have Brad Brock available, and it's dependent on their usage earlier in the game too. But with Antone going down now, it's that bullpen's getting really limited. So we'll see what happens there with the Reds, but definitely a frustrating situation. Man, setting waivers on Sunday is always like a lot to do, but especially this Sunday with trying to figure out bullpens. Oh my God, it was a mess. Jesse Winker exited Saturday's game with a hip contusion, but manager David Bell confirmed Winker will be good to go for the Reds on Monday, so keep him in your lineups. Mark Canna was placed on the IL on Friday with left hip tendonitis. Tony Kemp started each game this weekend and is 17% rostered. He has second base and outfield eligibility. On an appearance on Chris Rose's Rotation podcast, Tyler Glasnow expressed that he was, quote, pretty optimistic about being able to come back sooner than later, based on how his arm is currently feeling. Some good news for Tyler Glasnow. Corey Seager no longer has a timetable for a return after lingering soreness has emerged in his right hand. And we were talking before this, Scott, and you said basically everyone who goes on a rehab assignment finds a way to get hurt again.
That's been how it's happened this year. Tommy La Stella, another one over the weekend, rehabilitating, what was it, a hamstring or something?
Yeah.
Broke his thumb, completely unrelated. Like, and that's like, it wouldn't be so surprising if they suffered a setback with the same injury, but multiple instances of completely unrelated injury happening on the rehab assignment.
Seriously. Mike Soroka suffered a complete re-tear of his Achilles tendon. Apparently it happened when he was just like walking around the clubhouse or something. That happened last week, well, over the weekend technically, but it will require season-ending surgery again for Mike Soroka. Do we know anybody who has made it back from two Achilles tears?
Terrell Suggs, I believe. I want to say that's right.
I think Ryan Howard had one.
Adam Wainwright had one. Those are the two high-profile ones in baseball that I can think of.
I know Steve Smith in football had one, right? It wasn't two.
I don't know if he ever tore his Achilles.
Steve Smith? I thought he did.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's too many people who are two. I mean, Soroka's still very young, and he doesn't play a jumping sport, which probably helps, but... Mm-hmm. Man, this really sucks.
Yeah, it really does.
Terrell Suggs tore both Achilles.
Ooh.
So not even a re-rupture. They were like separate times, but
yikes.
Yeah. So no, I can't think of a professional athlete who's torn both Achilles or the same Achilles twice. That's it's really tough.
I'm not going to speculate on a timeline, but I would imagine he misses most of next season as well, if not all of it. Zach Plesac will make a rehab start at AA on Tuesday. He'll likely need a few of those. Denelson Lamet was placed on the IL with right forearm inflammation. He left his start over the weekend. If you don't have an IL spot, Denelson Lamet could be dropped, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
All right. Hector Santiago, who is now on the Mariners, guy's been around forever, was the first pitcher to be ejected because of foreign substances on his glove. Apparently, both he and his manager said that it was just rosin and sweat that kind of formed this sticky substance, but he's the first one.
That is what you would say.
Sure.
If you were caught using something that wasn't sweat and rosin, you would say, I was using the legal thing. That's not to say he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is kind of interesting that, like, the first player to get booted from a game for this was so relatively low profile, given that I kind of feel like the changes or lack thereof that we've seen so far have been relatively low profile. Like, it really has not been a dramatic change in the way the game is played yet. Obviously, we're only dealing with one turn plus through the rotation, but at the population level, at least, pitchers have not been dramatically less effective in the month of June than they were before, which I find interesting. You can also read about that on CBSSports.com.
Go read Chris's article. Read all about it. There's a lot of news here, so let's get it over with. Chris Sale will throw a two-inning live batting practice session on Wednesday. Eric Fetty was placed on the IL with an oblique strain. Willie Calhoun was placed on the IL with a fracture in his forearm. Eli White, Jason Martin, and Joey Gallo were in the outfield for the Rangers on Sunday. Freddie Galvis was placed on the IL with a right quad strain. Maybe we'll see Jamai Jones at some point as a result of this injury. Mike Moustakas is still dealing with pain from his injured heel, and I've seen him drop in some of my 15-team leagues. So if you need your IL spots, I think you can probably drop Mike Moustakas. Josh Naylor was diagnosed with a leg fracture after a nasty collision in the outfield on Sunday. Corey Kluber is not expected back until July or August. Steven Matz will return and start on Wednesday. Nico Hoerner began a rehab assignment Sunday at AAA. He's 38% rostered for those who have a middle infield spot in their leagues. Josh Fleming was placed on the IL over the weekend, which means it might be time to stash Luis Patino, who has delivered three straight five shutout inning performances in a row at AAA. His most recent start, he had 11 strikeouts. Any interest stashing Luis Patino?
Yeah, I mean, if they're stretching him out like that, he pitched well in short stints, short outings with the Rays earlier this year. And of course, he has a top prospect pedigree. So yeah, I would say that's they may need some innings from him as the summer wears on.
So you would assume he's ahead of like Shane Baz and Brent Honeywell's healthy, right?
Brent Honeywell's just been
he's been pitching in relief.
Even in the minors. So I wouldn't count on him. And I would think Joe Ryan would get the call before Shane Baz, just because Shane Baz is, I think he started out at high A this year. So
no, double A.
Double A? Okay.
Yeah. He's been amazing this season, though.
But yeah, I would assume Patino gets the next crack. He's already been up this year. He was up last year with the Padres. So yeah, I would assume him.
Blue Jays catcher Alejandro Kirk started a rehab assignment Saturday for those in two catcher leagues. Victor Robles left Sunday's game. X-rays were negative. Jonathan Villar was placed on the IL on Friday, but will begin a rehab assignment this week. JD Davis will also start his rehab on Wednesday. The biggest news of the weekend. How did I wait this long to get here? John Gant has been moved to the Cardinals bullpen. Wade LeBlanc will start on Monday.
You faked me out. You got me.
We'll have to wait for the next Gant. From John Gant.
That's right.
Coming.
We're going to have to wait quite a bit. Start or sit. Some of these players who are currently banged up. Max Fried will return on Wednesday against the Mets. He was dealing with a blister. Would you get Fried in your lineup?
Yeah.
All right. Sure. Jose Abreu was diagnosed with a bruised left knee after x-rays came back negative following his exit from Sunday's game. He got hit right on the side of the leg with a fastball. Start or sit.
That one was kind of ugly looking.
Yeah, he was rolling around there for a while in pain.
I would think sit.
It sounds similar to the Haniger injury, and he didn't miss that much time. I think I'd lean start unless it was a shallow league where he had like a great backup first baseman.
Yeah, it doesn't help that Jose Abreu has just been really bad this month too. So maybe give him a couple of days to.
That's also part of my thought.
Yeah, give him a couple of days to get back on track. Ketel Marte returned on Saturday and then left early again because of that hamstring injury. He was out of the lineup Sunday. He's going to go for more tests on Monday. Start or sit?
Would prefer to sit if I can, but I'm not sure I can. And I'm thinking of one league specifically where I don't have anybody I can start over him. So, yeah, it's probably going to have to be him.
I would sit Marte if possible. I suspect he's going on the IL.
Anthony Rizzo was removed from Sunday's game due to lower back tightness, and this is something he's dealt with off and on all season.
Yeah, probably. And similar to the Abreu situation.
Last one, Wander Franco is not hurt, but he only plays 5 games this week, and he is 3-for-22 with 5 strikeouts. So, great first game, Wander Franco, and then not so great.
Yeah, I will say,
18.5% strikeout rate, 18.5% walk rate. He hasn't. There's been some Jared Kelenic comps that I've seen in the emails and comments on Facebook, and don't think that's quite fair. I feel like he's.
Well, Kelenic started out with a low strikeout rate too. First 13 games,
yeah, but it was like
0.4%, and then it blew up after that.
Okay.
But my assumption with Kelenic is he started pressing, and I don't know that that's going to happen with Franco. I can't really predict the future with Franco. I'm not even going to try. The way rookies have gone recently, like maybe he needs to go back to the minors, maybe he doesn't. Considering the Rays are the only team with 5 games next week, probably try to sit him, but. Not everybody's carrying a backup shortstop.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to hit the most added and most dropped from the weekend here on Fantasy Baseball Today. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property, it's the location and neighborhood. Homes.com offers in-depth neighborhood guides with detailed video overviews, comprehensive narratives, and unbiased information from a multitude of sources. You thought we'd go in-depth with player analysis on Fantasy Baseball Today? You haven't seen anything yet. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. When looking at local schools, they offer test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com, we've done your homework. So the most added hitters will start with this group of 5. Abraham Toro Hernandez, he's up to 30% rostered. Wander Franco up at 95%. I'm happy that people are adding the Wander Franco from Tampa Bay and not the one from San Francisco. Please stop doing that. Kyle Schwarber is up to 94% rostered. Adam Duvall at 55%. Jonathan Scope at 86%. We talked a lot about these players recently. I guess Abraham Toro is the one that stands out more than the others for deeper leagues. 7 games this week for the Astros. Really, really good matchups. Anything to add on these 5?
I mean, Abraham Toro's best trait is that he puts the bat on the ball, and he just struck out 3 times Sunday and struck out 6 times over the weekend. So, I don't know. Astros have really good matchups this upcoming week, but... I'm not sure I'm thrilled to start Abraham Toro.
The biggest thing I struggle with him is like the minor league numbers are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
but he just like hasn't shown any pop in the majors, really. 7 home runs in 72 games. Exit velocities are all mediocre to bad. And so it's a question of whether he can figure that out, because the plate discipline is good. I just haven't seen it yet.
This next group of five most added hitters from the weekend, Steven Duggar for the Giants. He's up to 24%. He's still batting .326 with 6 homers and 6 steals, albeit with a very high strikeout rate. CJ Cron up to 53%. Akil Baddoo, 35%. Miles Straw up to 31%. And Straw went 2-for-4 with a walk and his 11th stolen base on Sundays. 31% rostered, which I just mentioned. Jonathan India is up to 68%. Come on! Get that up. Get Jonathan India up for this group. CJ Cron, look, the Rockies play 7 games. He's Scott's number one sleeper among his sleeper hitters. So we've talked a lot about CJ Cron, but even in shallower leagues, I would say go out there and get him. Straw, I've mentioned a lot recently. Steven Duggar is one that, like, we just kind of keep mentioning in passing, but he keeps playing well.
Well, the thing is, like, I kept waiting for his numbers to catch up to his strikeout rate, which you've pointed out is awful. But what's actually happened is the strikeout rate's caught up to his numbers. He struck out just 3 times in his, well, heading into Sunday, he had struck out 3 times in his past 12 games, 3 times in his past 39 plate appearances, which I don't know why his season-long strikeout rate is so high considering, because that is a ton of contact being made. I mean, it's not like he's turned into Abraham Toro in terms of putting the bat on the ball, but if he's not going to strike out 30% of the time, suddenly my mind is open to maybe him being a relevant fantasy contributor.
I don't know who the Giants hitting coach is, but like, that dude deserves a raise, because it seems like everybody that they've gotten, or everybody who's come up for them, has just like transformed into a much better hitter than they really had any right to be.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of true of the pitchers too.
Yeah.
They're the best team in baseball right now, I think. The Giants, they're the
first team to 50 wins.
Well, yeah. It really kind of coincides with when Farhan Zaidi took over the team, right? Because that must have happened, yep. I guess, 2 years ago. And yeah, I mean, they've been pretty competitive since. So shout out to the Giants.
I think they have the best record, like the 30th best record for any team since the Giants. Like in the time frame since the Giants moved to San Francisco, this is the 30th best record that a team has had at this point in the season, which is like 60 years now, something like that. Yeah, it's kind of wild.
That's crazy. Some of the most dropped hitters from the weekend: Patrick Wisdom, Carson Kelly, Yermín Mercedes, Miguel Andujar, and Pavin Smith. Those three at the bottom there. Yermín Mercedes, I currently have bids to drop him in a 15-team league. So I'm. How about in a league where he's catcher eligible? Would you still hold Mercedes there? He's been so awful.
Probably not a 12-teamer, even with the catcher eligibility. I contributed to dropping Wisdom, Mercedes, and Pavin Smith this weekend, and would have liked to on Andujar too. It was a 15-teamer, and there was nothing out there, so I had to hold on to Andujar.
Yeah. Andujar, after playing a ton of games in a row, he's now... he played over the weekend, but he has set 3 of the last 9 games for the Yankees. So some of the other most dropped hitters: Eric Haas, Jake Fraley, Anthony Santander, Jonathan Villar, Mike Moustakas. Santander is batting a cool .233 with a .642 OPS this year after having a breakout 2020. Chris, you're right, dropping Santander across the board.
Yeah, I mean, a 12-team five outfielder leagues, I think it's borderline whether you should drop him. I think it's fine to hang on to him, but anything shallower than that is fine.
The most added pitchers from this weekend: Chris Flexen, Jake Odorizzi, Ross Stripling, Patrick Sandoval, who had another 15 swinging strikes this weekend. Strikeouts have been up for him. He faces the Orioles this week. And then Joe Ross, who also has 2 starts. Flexen, Odorizzi, Stripling, Sandoval, Joe Ross, most added pitchers.
Yeah, so 4 of the 5 of these are on my 10 sleeper pitchers for this upcoming week. The one who isn't is actually Sandoval, but you mentioned he had another big swinging strike performance over the weekend, and the majority of them, trying to find the exact number, but the majority of them came on his slider, which was interesting because we knew he had a good changeup. So yeah, 9 of the 15 came on the slider. And this was after 9 strikeouts last time out, really all of his starts have been decent so far. The biggest problem is he's on a team that uses a 6-man rotation.
Yeah.
So you never get that 2-start week that you might be tempted to activate him.
And for Sandoval, I mentioned he's going up against the Orioles this week. The Orioles are actually great against left-handed pitching, so just keep that in mind. They're fourth in weighted on base average against southpaws this season. The next group of most added starting pitchers, Caleb Smith, Wade Miley, finally up to 84%. That number should be close to 100. James Caprillion, up to 82%. Jameson Taillon, he's got 2 starts this week. Danny Duffy, up to 82%. And this is an interesting one because he pitched in relief on Friday for 1 inning, and then the Royals came out afterwards and said that Danny Duffy is set to fill multiple roles for the Royals moving forward. So, not sure exactly what that means, but he's been really good this year, Danny Duffy has.
I'm not sure what that means either. Hope they they didn't learn their lesson with Jacob Junis. Because that didn't go so well when they started jerking him around. I don't know. I think he's still lined up to start Monday's game, Duffy is, right?
I believe he is.
So that, in theory, he's lined up for 2 starts. I don't know that he's going to go that deep into either.
Yeah,
I think that those comments make you feel a little worse about the prospect of starting him. I don't think I would.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the start on Monday, it's against the Red Sox, too, so that does not help things either. Yeah. Speaking of the Royals, I have a few names here that I want to throw on the drop-o-meter and see where we're at. Mike Minor is one of those. He got destroyed this weekend. He allowed 9 earned runs, 11 hits. He's got a 6.03 ERA over his last 5 starts. The drop-o-meter on Mike Minor.
9.
Yeah. I was going to say 6.
All right. So we'll go with 7.5. How about Domingo Herman, who at the Red Sox on Friday, 4 innings, 5 hits, 4 runs, 3 of those were earned. He has a 10.22 ERA over his last 3 starts. And I knew regression was due for him at some point because he had the stretch where he was facing a lot of really good matchups in a row. But I didn't think it was going to be this bad. But yeah, last 3 for Domingo Herman, ERA over 10. Drop-o-meter.
9.
6.
All right.
I knew that was going to happen.
I don't really get the appeal of Domingo Herman at this point. He had 1 season with a 4.03 ERA and won 18 games. And cool, he won 18 games. Yankees aren't that good right now. So chasing wins with Domingo Herman isn't that valuable.
I'm just looking at how good his numbers were 3 starts ago. And I'm trying to not overreact to 3 starts.
Yeah,
His
FIP is 4.53. His FIP in 2019 was 4.72. I don't think he's good.
Yeah, I kind of see both sides because there's some stuff in the underlying numbers, 12.7% swinging strike rate. That's pretty good. A 37% chase rate. That's also pretty good. He doesn't walk many guys. Yeah, so there is some stuff, but ultimately, at some point, you kind of are what your numbers say you are, right? So
most of his bad starts have been home run afflicted, which, give up a lot of home runs, you're going to have problems. But when you don't, he's usually pretty good. So I don't know. I don't think there's enough for me to conclude one way or another whether Domingo Herman is good. So
I think he's just a guy.
Even if so, I'm giving him a 6. I'm saying you're free to drop him if you can find something better. I just know in a lot of leagues I can't.
And you know who is better than him? Shane McClanahan. I don't know what more we have to do. Not that he had a great start over the weekend, but a quality start. 6 innings, 3 runs, 7 strikeouts, 10 swinging strikes on 87 pitches. He has a 3.18 ERA over his last 3 starts, and he's averaging over 87 pitches per game during that span. He's 66% rostered. This is a lot like Jonathan India, where both of the roster rates for India and Shane McClanahan just need to be higher. And I guess we'll just keep bringing them up until that happens because I would be okay. Basically. I would drop Herman. I would drop Minor for McClanahan. I have no problem.
Sure.
Yeah. The issue is just the overall numbers don't look that great. I think that's the thing that's holding him back. The 4.09 ERA, a lot of strikeouts, but only 50 innings. I can see why his rate isn't higher, but it should be.
Yeah, I think people need to realize that, since Glasnow has gone down, they've kind of taken off the kid's gloves for McClanahan, and they're letting him go out there. He gets a ton of whiffs. I like him a lot, but you don't need me to tell you that. I tell you all the time. A few other waiver wire starting pitchers. Part one that I wanted to mention, David Peterson over the weekend, 6 innings, 1 run, 5 strikeouts. He's 29% rostered. John Gray returned at the Brewers, 5 shutouts with 10 strikeouts, 17 swinging strikes on 83 pitches. He's 44% rostered at home against the Pirates this week. Drew Smyly, 6 innings, 1 run, only 3 strikeouts. He's got a 1.62 ERA over his last 3 starts. Johnny Cueto up against the A's, 7 shutouts, 6 strikeouts. He's 53% rostered. Last name on this list, Merrill Kelly, who was at the Padres, 6 shutouts. He has back-to-back quality starts. He's 26% rostered. Peterson, John Gray, Smyly, Cueto, Merrill Kelly. Interested in any of these guys?
Gray, probably the most, but still not that much. Kelly's been kind of good for like 2 months now.
He's been inconsistent. He has starts where he gets blown up, and then out of nowhere at the Padres, he gives you a quality start.
Yeah, but since April 27th, so almost exactly 2 months, he's got a 3.84 ERA with 69 strikeouts and 70 and a third innings. It's pretty good. He's averaging over 6 innings per start, right around 6 innings per start. I think that's just under.
He might be Domingo Germán.
He might be.
In a good way.
Yes.
But I'm saying, like, if your choice is dropping Domingo Germán for one of these guys,
I think I'd do it for Gray.
I probably wouldn't. And, you know, because I think the bad outcome for Germán is something like Merrill Kelly.
All right, waiver wire starting pitchers part two, and shame on me, took way too long to get to Zach Thompson, admittedly. Here.
I know that I wanted him to be my, oh my goodness gracious, because Zach Thompson of the Marlins.
There's so much to get to from the weekends, but we're here. We're here now. We're talking about Zach Thompson, who had 6 innings, 2 runs with 11 strikeouts. Hey, look, that's why I get to listen to the podcast all the way through. So if you're still here, I appreciate it. 6 innings, 2 runs, 11 strikeouts, 16 swinging strikes. This weekend for Zach Thompson, who's on the Marlins, if you didn't know. He's 18% rostered. Kyle Muller, who was at the Reds on Sunday, 5 shutouts with 9 strikeouts, 16 swinging strikes in that start. And then a few other names here. Eric Lauer, 6 shutout. Okay. Max Kranick, kind of interesting. He was at the Cardinals, 5 perfect innings with 3 strikeouts. He is a prospect-ish for the Pirates. And then Jordan Lyles up against the Mariners, 7 innings, 1 run, 4 strikeouts.
So. All right. So there's really two people I want to talk about here.
Okay.
Zach Thompson and Kyle Muller. But Thompson, especially, because these 11 strikeouts in 6 innings, like, I've been very dismissive of Thompson so far. He's 27 years old. You look at his minor league numbers. It was almost, at least in recent years, almost entirely a reliever. At AAA this year, he had an ERA over 6, I believe it was. Yeah, 660 and 8 relief appearances at AAA. This year, 2019, 5.23 ERA, 1.43 WHIP, 10K per 9, but still, like, these are obviously not good numbers from a guy who was in the minors into his late 20s. Not a prospect, right? He looks so good. He looks, not only in this start, his previous start, 4 one-hit innings with 7 strikeouts. So the strikeout was way high again, and only 1 hit allowed. The breakdown of the pitches: cutter, four seamer, curveball. He has a changeup too. The four seamer, high spin rate on that, so it's good at swinging misses. And I just watched the highlights of this start against the Nationals over the weekend, and the number of uncomfortable swings that were being taken on his pitches, like, they did not have a good read on him at all. They were not taking confident swings at him while he was piling up tall. These whips.
Yeah, that's one of the things that he is. You know, 6'7", has kind of that an overhand delivery.
A lot of drop on that curveball. Like I said, high spin on the fastball. The cutter, I think, is really deceptive, playing it off the fastball too.
That cutter might be the key, because I'm looking at, like, scouting reports. This was, like, he's in the Marlins system. He was a minor league free agent that they signed. Apparently, he was, like, a high priority for them in the minor league free agent market, but he was not someone I'd ever heard of before he got the call. And I'm looking at a scouting report from January of 2020 when he was with the White Sox, and it's mentioning no cutter. It was 2 fastballs, curveball, and, like, a show me change. So yeah, the cutter does appear to be a new pitch for him. And
Well, I wonder if since he was used in relief, he didn't get a chance to unveil like his full arsenal. Like one of those guys, you don't often see the reliever get better when moved to the starting role, but usually it's because they're able to use more of their pitches. And I was reading about prior to his call-up, even though he was being used as a reliever at AAA, like the Marlins identified him as somebody who could start if they needed an extra starter. And I don't know if there's an organization that has a better read on pitching right now than the Marlins, because they keep unearthing these guys. Yeah. I think he might be legitimate. It would be one of the unlikeliest breakouts I've ever seen.
But
Zach Thompson might be legit.
There's no such thing as a pitching prospect.
That's true.
The man said.
That is what is said.
For Thompson, would you put him ahead of all those pitchers we mentioned in the first group? Peterson, yep. Gray, Smiley, Cueto, Kelly?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't think it's anything close to a guarantee that he's better, but we know like the other guys are known quantities for the most part. You know, he could be anything. He could even be Merrill Kelly.
A lot of Merrill Kelly references on this podcast today. Would you guys drop Mike Minor or Domingo Herman for Zach Thompson?
I would drop Minor. I might drop Herman. Shallower league, I'd drop Herman. Take a shot on the upside.
Anything you guys wanted to add on Kyle Muller, who looked really good on Sunday? Four-seam slider curve. He averaged 94 miles per hour on his fastball. 9 strikeouts against the Reds.
Yeah, so 4 of his 16 whiffs came on the fastball, 6 on the slider, 5 on the curveball. Very impressive to see that kind of distribution for a rookie, somebody who's hardly pitched in the majors at all. He only allowed 1 hit in 4 innings in his previous start. Too many walks in the minors, so that could rear its ugly head at some point, but the stuff certainly looks good. A lot of spin on the fastball. Kyle Muller. I like Thompson more, I think, but Kyle Muller's interesting too.
All right, I'm just going to bounce around from here on out for the next 5 minutes to try and get to as many things that happened this weekend as possible. Keston Hira had four hits this weekend, including 2 home runs. He did have 5 strikeouts during that 3-game stretch. He's 37% rostered. Scott, I know you really like the Brewers matchups this upcoming week, but Chris, Keston Hira making some noise here. Would you be looking to add him in deeper leagues, shallower leagues, anywhere? What do you think?
Sure. Yeah, I added him in Tout Wars.
And what is that? It's a 12-team roto league?
12-team roto, yeah. Okay. It's an OBP league, so it's not necessarily... I mean, I guess there's not much of a difference between OBP and average for him at this point. They're both bad. But yeah, I picked him up just to like see if there's a spark. You know, maybe he's the kind of pitch hitter who... You know, he's specifically struggled with high fastballs. That's been a real problem for him. He hasn't been able to hit fastballs at all this season, but especially the high ones. You know, if there's a little less spin on the baseball, maybe the pitches appear to rise a little bit less. Maybe.
I think his home run today was off a high fastball. I think somebody tweet that out.
Maybe that's the kind of thing where small things can make a big impact for individual players, even if we don't see a huge change on the population level.
Scott, what do you think we can get for Casey Mize right now in a trade? If we were looking to shop him in a redraft league, he was great this weekend against the Astros. 6 innings, 1 run, 5 strikeouts. He has a 3.46 ERA, but 10% swinging strike rate, 4.23 xFIP, an expected ERA over 5. We know that the innings are going to be a concern at some point for Casey Mize. What do you think you can get for him in a trade?
Like a 12-team or less, my assumption is not that much because a low strikeout guy with an ERA on the wrong side of 350, I just don't think that has a lot of trade value, but he's been so consistent, 3 earned runs or fewer in every start since April, that maybe you could get like a number 2 outfielder for him. It doesn't hurt to check. I do think he's more likely to get worse than better from here, so it doesn't hurt to check.
Oh, right.
Yeah, his velocity has been dropping as the season's gone on, and it's basically back where it was last season now. So that's not a great sign either.
Well, doesn't hurt to try. Try and shop Casey Mize, see what you can get.
Oh, yes. Get what you can.
Do it.
Is what I would say.
We had a bunch of studly pitching performances this weekend, but I'll just throw out a few, and if there's anything you guys would like to add. Kyle Gibson against the Royals, 7 shutout with 10 strikeouts. Julio Urias, 5 1/3, 2 runs, 12 strikeouts. Against the Cubs, Cole Irvin had 8 shutout on Sunday against the Giants with 8 strikeouts. Clayton Kershaw against the Cubs, Sunday Night Baseball, 8 innings, 1 run, 13 strikeouts, 26 swinging strikes on 101 pitches. 22 of those swinging strikes came on his slider. Kershaw, his Irvin.
Second start of the season with 20 plus swinging strikes on the slider. That's amazing.
That's wild. Kershaw, Irvin, Arias, Gibson. Anything you guys would like to add?
I think it's amazing. We're halfway through the season now, basically, and Kyle Gibson has a 2 ERA. That is his ERA, 2.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, xFIP 389, that's not so good. xERA 326, that is good. Strikeouts aren't really there. And he's Kyle Gibson, 33-year-old, who's never been a fantasy asset, really. So I still am skeptical that anybody's excited to trade for Kyle Gibson unless you're playing with a bunch of novices. But if someone is, if you can deal Kyle Gibson like he's a number two for fantasy teams, then I think that's a good sell high situation. Otherwise, just ride it out.
It's really interesting that he's added this cutter this season. It's been his worst pitch, and he's pitching so well.
Yeah,
it's actually been a pretty good swing and miss pitch, but it's getting crushed when guys do make contact with it. Pitching's weird.
I think it's helped everything else play up, I guess, if that makes sense. But
yeah, that does seem to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Starter sit real quick for this week. Tony Gonsolin coming off his, I guess, best start of the season. It was good. It was all right.
Short. He's still building up, but it was good.
Seven strikeouts and four. Yeah. Four innings, one run, seven strikeouts. He is up against the Nationals this week. Starter sit Tony Gonsolin.
I'd lean towards sitting, but you could do worse.
Yeah, start him in a 15-teamer, sit in anything shallower, I think.
I would also sit Adam Wainwright, though I wanted to highlight, the guy has been awesome. He's delivered five straight quality starts. He's got a 2.45 ERA during that span, but he is at the Rockies this week. So he's also been great at home, 2.55 ERA in 10 home starts, an ERA over six on the road. Please sit Adam Wainwright this weekend. Just a few hitting leftovers, Shohei Ohtani. Went 3-for-4 on Sunday with a double, a trick, a triple, a sock, and a shoe. 25th home run, 11th steal of the season. The guy is just ridiculous. Ronald Acuna went 2-for-4 with his 21st home run of the year. DJ LeMahieu has a 10-game hitting streak and is batting .297 in June, so he's coming around. Rafael Devers, we mentioned earlier, hit an absolute moon rocket off Gerrit Cole, 451 feet. That was his 19th homer of the season. He's up to 64 RBI. Trevor Story had a sock and a shoe on Saturday. He's now up to 9 homers and 14 steals. Christian Yelich has been better-ish his last 15 games, .286 batting average. 2 homers, 1 steal, and Joey Gallo. That's the wrong one, man. I played the wrong...
Breaking out fantasy regulators. Fantasy
justice.
You're falling.
Joey Gallo, he's coming around. He's got 3 homers over his last 2 games. He now has 16 home runs with a .994 OPS. Not all 16 of his home runs have come in June, but he has a .994 OPS in June. So he has been much better. We're going to wrap up with some streamers from the weekend. And we'll start with, well, actually for the next coming days. Monday to stream or not stream. Dylan Bundy at the Yankees. Garrett Richards versus the Royals. Matt Manning at Cleveland. Eli Morgan versus the Tigers, Spencer Howard at the Reds, and Tyler Anderson, revenge game at the Colorado Rockies. It's very bad.
Don't make me pick any of these, Frank.
All right, Scott, just give me one.
Man. Garrett Richards.
I think it might be Bundy for me, which I don't love.
Yeah, I mean, he might be the one pitcher that can actually get the Yankees lineup back on track, so I don't know if I... Oh man, he's been so bad. I think I would go with Matt Manning at Cleveland, but yeah, it's not great. Tuesday, to stream or not to stream, Jameson Taillon versus the Angels, Andrew Heaney at the Yankees, Caleb Smith at the Cardinals, Zach Davies at the Brewers, Tony Santion versus the Padres, and Chris Flexen at the Blue Jays. A little bit better.
Yeah, I could see doing Heaney. I could see doing Caleb Smith. I could see doing Davies. Probably not. Look, I'm not thrilled about any of them, to be clear, but I could see doing them.
Taillon? By the way, just to go back to the previous one, Garrett Richards has actually had the biggest drop in spin rate. He's just only made 2 starts, but his spin rate is down over 300 RPM over his last 2 starts.
Cheater.
It's been wild.
Not great. I don't hate Jameson Taillon on Tuesday, coming off his best start of the year. and he's got a 3.29 ERA at home this season. So I'll throw
Otani's going to clock him.
He might. Man, I really want to go to one of these games this week, but I don't know I'm going to have time. Chris, yeah. Man. I was going to say like Thursday at 1 o'clock, we might be able to make it happen, but...
Oh, man, no. I have a flight at 7. I don't know if I can make that one.
I want to see Otani play. All right, we'll see what we can do. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So, why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazons of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.